This is F1 Debrief. You messed it up, you deal with it. Coming up this week, we discuss 2010 again, run through all the action from Turkey, and rename Formula One. It's been quite a hectic weekend for us so far. We've actually been cobbling together this show right at the last minute.
Well, we're trying to squeeze in the old parade lap.
Yep.
It does make our deadlines a little bit tighter, but we've done it though.
Yeah, well, I was writing this show basically a few minutes before we came on air, but I think actually, you know, saving things to the last minute works for Button in qualifying. He's always last to cross the line, always pole.
Right.
So it should work for us too.
Now you're advocating that, are you?
Yeah.
Just no preparation and then building up to one heck of a crescendo.
Yep. Good week, bad week. It's been a good week for Donington Park as Simon Gillett has settled out of court with Wheatcroft and Sons over the unpaid rent situation. It was just over $2 million due, I think, and the legal action was about to get going, but Donington can now concentrate on its other problems like councils and planning permission, little
Getting
things
fans
like that.
In and out, that kind of thing, the bus service, the railway station that hasn't been built yet, all of those things.
Having a track that is finished.
In time.
It's been a bad week for the Brabham family as they've had to distance themselves from a potential new team who've lodged a 2010 entry. They're also considering legal action. Brabham Grand Prix are the team in question, whilst Brabham Enterprises aren't happy about it.
You wouldn't be. You wouldn't be, would you? Because, I mean, you don't want a team. These teams that are coming forward don't look like they're going to be up to much, and you wouldn't want one of those dragging your name through the dirt for the benefit of Max.
What is up with taking all the old names and bringing them back, though? Because we also had... Is it Lightspeed are going to use Lotus?
I think the best explanation we've had for it was something Joe wrote in his blog, and that's because there's a potential that the big manufacturer teams may be exiting Formula One, fans need something to relate to, and therefore the FIA appear to be encouraging the return of names that people have actually heard of.
It's been a good week for struggling European races, as yet another one of Bernie's cash cow circuits seems to be on the way out. Turkey organisers have expressed their concerns that they can't afford to run the Grand Prix after their contract expires in 2011. If the grandstands this weekend are anything to go by, they'll be lucky to be back next year.
It was a little bit desolate. Is it fair to say it's the most empty Grand Prix of all the ones we've seen thus far? There didn't appear to be anybody in the stands, and all the grandstands were covered by tarpaulin. They couldn't even be bothered to put an expo sign up for us to pretend that they're just advertising something.
It's like, don't worry, there's no people, we're advertising, it's fine.
There's a criminally low amount of turnout for these Grand Prix, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better. If anything, it's getting worse and worse and worse as the season progresses.
It's been a bad week for Red Bull as they turned up in Turkey with an alternate motorhome, which was much more understated and actually much nicer. In this week's Aside with Joe, Joe said the big one had gone to Le Mans.
Now that
What's
says,
it doing there?
Well, that's interesting because it's almost as if Dear Diddy, is putting a little bit more emphasis on Le Mans and not so bothered about Formula One. If Formula One gets a second-rate motorhome and Le Mans gets the big daddy, what's that say about his plans for the future of Formula One? I would say, however, that I really, really like the temporary one.
It is nicer.
I prefer it. It's more understated. It's got nicer colours, less domineering, and I'd rather they kept that one.
News and Views. In my show notes, News and Views says, 2010 update, I am getting bored of writing this down.
More politics.
Mm-hmm.
Never ending. A continual stream of more and more rubbish coming out in the news. We ought to cover it a little bit. Do you think we ought to just keep up to speed? What's happened in the last 7 days?
Okay, Max said, if the teams want to make their own rules, they'll have to make their own series, because he owns Formula One, which isn't true for a start, because Bernie owns Formula One, doesn't he?
CVC, technically.
Yeah.
Own the rights to the name.
But the team said, we don't want to make our own breakaway series. We want to be in yours, but we want it by our rules. So they're still not in agreement.
To be honest with you, the more this goes on, the more I find myself agreeing with the teams and the less I find myself agreeing with Max, because the teams are approaching it in exactly the way things should be approached, which is slowly and steadily and not rushing into things, not making any rash decisions, which is all Max appears to be doing. But he is coming out with a lot of fighting talk here.
Yeah, and it's obviously working on some of the teams, because Force India, they submitted a solo entry to 2010, just like Williams did last week. So that's another team going solo because of their commercial concerns.
That happened at a really interesting point during the weekend, because this first came up on Friday between Free Practice 1 and Free Practice 2, and Morris Hamilton and Ian Phillips were on Radio 5 Live.
Yep.
So we could have expected an exclusive from Ian Phillips as to exactly what is going on at Force India. And he lied.
Did he? I wasn't listening. What did he say?
I don't know if he ducked the question or whether he just... I'll have to listen back to it. But he debunked the rumor as that Force India were splitting from FOTA and entering an unconditional entry.
And then they did.
And that is exactly what had happened. By the end of the day, it transpired that that was the case. So I don't know what he was talking about. I will go back and I will dig it out, and we shall listen to it and we shall confirm. But it's a shame because he had a great opportunity to explain what was going on to the fans at home, and he decided not to take that opportunity.
I'm not sure if FOTA have actually suspended them yet, but... I think John Howitt said that's most likely what's going to happen, which is only fair because that's what happened to Williams.
Absolutely. You can't go around suspending Williams and not Force India. However, Force India have put an entry in with FOTA. So I'm not sure if they are able to suspend them or not,
depending on
what the agreement is. I'm surprised that they're allowed to put in two entries.
It was very telling, though, even if they haven't been suspended yet. The drivers and teams had a meeting in Turkey over the weekend, and there were only 8 teams represented. So that probably tells you all you need to know, because the GPDA... are worried that its members are not going to have a job next year.
As you would be.
Which is fair enough.
They're also concerned that they're not having their voices heard, which is also true, because we know for a fact that Max doesn't give a damn what they say, as we saw when he hiked up the license fees. He basically disregarded them as a non-entity and people who should keep their noses out, and therefore he's not soliciting the driver's opinion on the future of Formula One. And there is an argument to say that they should have, they would have decent opinions on this matter.
So essentially, the GPDA and FOTA got together for about half an hour. And after their meeting, the drivers came out and said, yes, we agree with the teams. We want Formula One to sort of stay as it is.
Yeah, well, also, we want Formula One decisions to be made slowly and carefully.
With some thought.
And retain the essence of what Formula One is and not let the likes of bloody Lightspeed in.
I guess in the long run, it doesn't really make much difference that the drivers... agree with FOTA, because like you said, Max doesn't care either way, but it does add some weight to the FOTA publicity side of things.
It does. It's something the fans need to hear, because there's no one stronger in the fans' opinion than the drivers that they follow. And if they think for a second that the drivers that they're following may not be in Formula One next year, the fans may question whether or not they wish to turn up to races. Mind you, they're not turning up to races at the moment.
They're not.
Maybe just tune into the television. Friday is the next D-Day. It's the next deadline on our horizon.
Yes, the successful teams for 2010 will be announced next Friday, which is the 12th. And that's supposed to be the day when the Concorde Agreement is ready, but it won't be.
There's almost no chance of
Max
that
has already said he's not signing it.
Yep, so that deadline is irrelevant. However, we will get to see who is initially named, and bearing in mind this isn't the end of it either, this is just another stage in the chapter. It's stage 2 in the political bargaining process, and we'll see who is named and who isn't, and it'll be an interesting day in the comments.
I guess
probably a lot of things flying and stuff hitting the fan as Formula One fans realize that Formula One is becoming a bit of a nightmare.
I guess really it's just the moment when Max says no, your conditional entry is not accepted. The race. I hadn't really thought about it that much all weekend, because we don't do our track previews anymore, but when the first couple of laps of the race began, I realized I really like Turkey.
Turkey is a great place
as a track
for a race. It's wonderful. It's a Tilke design, but it is his best.
It is one of the best.
Didn't fare too well in our Character Cup, has to be said. There has been in the past some great instances of overtaking. I really like the undulation changes. Turn 8 is, goes without saying, is fantastic. I like it when Formula One comes here.
I was actually expecting more of an incident on the first corner, and there was nothing. Another clean start by the drivers. They're all getting much cheaper light.
I'm not sure what's going on, actually. It's that they've become professional drivers all of a sudden.
How did that happen?
Absolutely no idea. Even Fisichella, a man who's never made it around turn one, he just got through clean. Not a problem.
He got through the first lap and a couple of more, but he didn't get through the whole race.
He didn't. What did he get, 5 laps into or something? Yeah. I did see one car going wide at the corner, but nobody lost any wings or no crashes, and nobody's race was ended.
Even with Barrichello, who was basically going nowhere, they all managed to avoid him. I mean, he essentially went backwards.
Yes, he
and
did.
It must be so depressing to be on the grid, desperate to go away, and all these cars are just streaming past you.
I'm sure that's not a great feeling, but he did make it a spectacular start to the Grand Prix, because he put in some good moves at the beginning. It got a bit ragged, got a bit frustrated, but I liked the way he was driving, and he gave us a little bit of entertainment at a time when there wasn't much going on.
Because in Australia, he had the front wing would basically bounce off anything, and I think he was trying that again. But it didn't work so much because his front wing got a bit damaged and he had to change it.
Not as strong as he maybe thought it was.
Not again, quite the tank though, he was hoping for.
Again, this is the front wing that we thought would be all over the track at the first Grand Prix. The front wings that are huge and destined to be smashed to pieces. Again, only the end flap came off despite crashing into another car. They are really, really strong front wings this year. It's incredible the amount of, I guess it's because the weight of the car needs to go forward, but they make them really bulky these days.
I don't think it's any surprise that Vettel didn't hold on to the lead throughout the whole race, but it was a surprise that he lost it straight away.
He choked.
Useless.
He absolutely choked. He was under pressure. It was pretty much a make or break race for his championship challenge. It broke before he even got going. The car, the technology was all reliable. Everything worked. He got off the line well, went into the first corner in the lead, but wasn't hindered by his dirty line start. So he managed to keep Vettel honest. And then the guy lost it.
He just ran wide, Button sailed past, and that was it. Button was in the lead, and there was no touching that man.
No, it's worth mentioning that Vettel lost, was it one session in Friday? He basically put in a couple of laps. He had a gearbox or some kind of...
He's had a bad weekend all around because he stopped out on track and had to push his own car.
Yes.
And then he had to change his engine.
That's true.
And it's just not been good. The only highlight was pole position, really.
Yeah, which he pulled together very well. And I have to say, qualifying... How good is qualifying in Formula One at the moment? Damn sight better than the racing.
I prefer Saturdays to Sundays at the moment.
Really, really exciting. A lovely build-up, a lovely crescendo, and I'm so excited on Saturday. It's a shame that Sunday can't quite deliver the same amount of anticipation and excitement. However, yeah, Vettel pulled it together when it really mattered on qualifying on Saturday, and then lost it when it most mattered on Sunday.
So his championship chances are basically over now.
It's still in with the tiniest amount. You know, the guy shouldn't give up yet. There are people in many worse positions than he's in, and we've seen comebacks greater than this one. However, this was a really good chance to shine, and he even got beaten by his teammate.
Yeah, and Webber's now caught up with him quite drastically in the championship standings.
Yep, and so it's between either of them. Second time this season that Webber is out-strategized Vettel. To bring it home in front of him. It was Vettel going for a three-stop that really put him behind Webber, and Webber put in the fast laps when he was required to. He drove a perfectly clean race. I don't recall him doing anything wrong all Sunday afternoon, and he ended up in second position.
It is interesting that, because Vettel was always going to do a three-stop, wasn't he? And so he needed to be in the lead. But once he lost it, they didn't switch his strategy up or anything. They just left it as it was. It was kind of like... You messed it up. You deal with it.
It could be that. That's one way of looking at it. And I'm sure that's the way Vettel will see it. However, you can also say that Red Bull need a strategist. They don't have a Ross Brawn on the pit wall, or whoever's on the Honda, or whoever's on the Brawn pit wall calling the shots. They don't have somebody like that out there to make those decisions and to see the big picture. And again, not for the first time this year, they've not been able to see that. And I think Vettel said that he was calling for the team to switch to a two-stopper, and for whatever reason, they stuck to plan A, and they refused to waver.
In the comments, Gavin said he wished that Vettel had stayed in front because it would have made the race more interesting. But it wasn't, you know, it had its moments. I'm not sure I ever thought I'd say this, but Piquet made a great overtaking manoeuvre on Hamilton.
yeah, that's, again, not too much to really... say beyond what you've already said on that subject.
Well, they were side by side through several corners, and it was great stuff. And that's what we were supposed to have more of.
Yeah, what we were looking at, though, really, was one Kurs car versus one non-Kurs car, and that's what made it exciting.
That battle over again.
Yeah, it wasn't... it's nothing to do with this year's regulation changes in terms of the way that the wings are working and the dirty air is being managed. It's basically... Hamilton managed to stay ahead on Kurs, and then Piquet managed to get him better with a car that worked with better traction out of the corners.
It was notable, though, because it's Piquet, and he managed it cleanly and didn't crash.
He didn't hit anybody. He didn't fall off the track. Did he make it to the end of the race? He did, didn't he?
Yep.
That's incredible.
Did pretty well, which is painful to say.
Piquet did pretty well. We should put that on record, because it's unfair to be cruel to the guy, but he has been spectacularly useless this year, and therefore we should commend him for bringing the car home in one piece and for passing Lewis.
The final podium was Button, Webber and Vettel, but notably Kubica finished in the points, his first points of the season. How has it taken this long for BMW to get Kubica into the points?
Well, the double diffuser, is it double or is it triple? I forget how many.
Multiple.
The big thing on the back, the new bit, that's working a treat. It's incredible. In practice, they played their cards really close to their chest. We saw nothing in terms of speed from either driver. Kubica was heard on the radio bitching and moaning about the handle in the car, and it sounded like it was another bad weekend for BMW. And suddenly, in qualifying, out of nowhere, up he jumped into Q3.
And another team that did really well was Williams, because they've been sort of gradually going towards the back. but they seem to pull it out a bit.
How gutted were you for Kazuki Nakajima with that wheel?
No.
Stuck wheel spinner
stupid
thing.
Stupid wheel spinners.
The annoying pointless aero device, which shouldn't even be on the cars.
And pointless is a very apt title because Nakajima would have been in the points.
And now he's still pointless. That's a shame. Williams, yeah, they for a very long time, I thought that they'd squandered their initial early season advantage and they hadn't made the most of the opportunities they were given, and therefore they were about to be swallowed up by the bigger teams. However...
Well, then also, I just want to say, they were saying, yeah, and we're not going to bring Kurz in, so it was like, oh God, they're never going to get anywhere. But now, it's all turned around.
It looks like any advantage you bring into the start of the season this year can be maintained, because the lack of testing means that people are only able to throw things on the car on Friday. They're not able to make considered adjustments and in minor improvements. Basically, you bring bits to the circuit, you throw stuff on it, and you see if it works. And if it doesn't, you don't catch up with Williams. And as long as Williams don't throw anything bad on the car or are able to roll back anything new they bring in, it looks like they might be able to sort of continue this advantage furthermore.
Well, talking of no testing, Fisichella was out early, lap 5 or something, and I think it was David Croft said they could just bring him out again, you know, fix him up, patch him up and bring him out and use it as testing. Because they used to do that, didn't they? Was it when qualifying was one lap, so it mattered where you finished?
Yes, which I quite like that rule. I mean, I didn't like the whole one lap qualifying thing, although I think you did.
I did.
Which doesn't surprise me, just to be contrary.
No, I have reasons.
I did like the fact that more cars... The effort was made to bring the cars back out onto track, and the fans had something to look at. Mind you, with nobody in the grandstands, maybe there's less argument for that this weekend.
But he could have done it, and it's a shame that he didn't, really. Barrichello, also the other retiree, first Brawn retiree of the year.
That's quite an incredible statistic. But he killed the gearbox on the start line, destroyed the darn thing.
Yeah.
There was no way, I think Davidson pointed out that there was no way the car was going to finish the race, if only because... seventh gear was missing from Rubens' car?
Well, there was a point when his engineer came on the radio and was like, you're doing really well, well done. And Barrichello's like, but I don't even have seventh gear.
Yes.
Which just shows you how good the car is.
He can't afford a gearbox penalty at the next race, so he was always going to park it. I think they ran it as long as they could. They got enough data from the car. It was necessary. And it was a shame, really. That was the end of Rubens' race and possibly, well, a major dent in his championship campaign and possibly the end of it.
He did look very frustrated afterwards.
What I really like about Rubens, actually, is a couple of races ago, he said a quote, if I ever suspect that there are any kind of team orders going on in this team, I should just leave and that will be the end of it. And then today he insinuated there was team orders going on in his side of the garage in an interview on television. So I'm slightly confused. Maybe I misinterpreted what he was saying. Maybe he was frustrated. But if he really does think that, I don't understand why he hasn't just walked out today.
I don't think he meant that. In the comments, Lou said he didn't insinuate there were team orders. He just said luck was against him. And she even gurred about it. So don't go upsetting people.
Fair enough. What I recall him saying is there's always something wrong in my side of the garage. Something along those lines was what he put in. And what the insinuation I took from it was it never goes wrong with Jensen. Now, you could argue that he was a victim.
I would say he was just being factual and that Jensen is being the one that gets all the luck. He's one of those annoying people that just keeps on being lucky.
Two other drivers I did want to mention very quickly. Actually, one thing does come to mind, and it's not on my show notes, but I'm going to throw a curveball in there. You watched and enjoyed the grid walk, Miss Christine Blatchford.
Yes, I did.
I hate the grid walk and I'm never watching it. What happened?
Yeah, well, I haven't watched it for a long time because I keep running out the room whenever Martin takes to the grid. But now that David Coulthard does it with him, it is less cringeworthy and I can watch it because it always used to be Martin pootling around the grid looking for drivers.
And getting lost,
talking to strangers. And I know there are moments of genius, you know, drivers unprepared, things like that. But it's so painful to watch him getting there that I just didn't enjoy it. But now that he's got someone to talk to, if... they're just waiting. Like, for instance, they were waiting for Massa, I think it was.
So they could chat amongst themselves.
They were talking to each other and then they got to ask the questions. So
fine idea.
It was worthwhile.
I like the sitting on the floor to get a driver's eye view of the first corner. That was a brilliant insight from two ex-drivers who could really take you to where you wanted to be at the start of the race. It was exactly the kind of thing that we needed and I really liked it. I also suspect slightly that you like Rob.
Well, yeah, of course. But also because DC is a very current ex-driver. That doesn't make any sense. But he has knowledge, like Martin said, what are they talking about now? And he could say that, whereas Martin probably wouldn't know because he hasn't been on a grid in anger for a long time.
Sure. No, I think I just wanted to mention it because you've been so against the grid book for such a long time, and I think the BBC have done a wonderful job with that segment. Some other bits are still quite ropey, but with the grid book segment, I think they won you over.
All it took is two people. Who knew?
Just before we move on, a couple of other drivers to mention. Felipe Massa, very quiet race, but came home sixth. Thought that was quite good.
Okay.
Much better than his teammate. Wherever Kimi came in, was it ninth or tenth or something, Kimi came in, which was a little bit of a disappointing drive for him. So hats off to Felipe. And also, just your thoughts on what is going on at Toro Rosso when they've got the same chassis as a car that came in second and third. And where did they finish up? They were last, weren't they? As Bourdais came in 18th. And Buemi wasn't that much higher. Where was Buemi?
Buemi did do a good overtaking move on Hamilton as well, I think.
Okay.
And that was good. But apart from that, they are just at the back and there's no point even talking about them.
But I think Bourdais mentioned during the weekend that they have an issue with tyre temperatures. But I do not understand why. Because, I mean, the engine they've got in the car shouldn't make any difference to how the balance and the aero handling is working. And I cannot fathom why Red Bull can't share informational data or whatever it is about what's going on with their cart in order to bring that one further forward, because it's the same machinery, and we know the drivers are pretty handy. You know, they're no Vettel and no Webber, but they shouldn't be at the back of the Grand Prix.
Well, maybe, I mean, Matichitz bought them up so he could sell them on, so maybe he's already distancing them from Red Bull.
I guess so. I guess maybe he's putting all the focus on Red Bull, but it's just such a shame. The car should be, you know, we know the chassis. It's an absolute peach of a chassis. I guess they haven't got the triple diffuser. That's the only thing they're missing. But in Vettel's hands, I'm sure that car will be doing better than it currently is.
That pretty much sums up the race, I think. It wasn't thrilling, but there were some things of note. We'll catch up with the fantasy races standings after this short break.
If you don't have the time to trawl through website after website looking for Formula One news, let F1 Minute do the hard work for you. Delivered to your ears every weekday, F1 Minute is 60 seconds of headlines keeping you up to date with drivers, teams, rules, regulations, testing, races, launches, results, quotes, anything you can think of. Visit f1minute.com for all the details and to find the latest show.
Fantasy Racers.
In fifth place, Scott's on speed with 5376. Fourth, Brauntastic with 5609. Third is Celtic Racing, 5741. Second is Demigods of Aeons, 5743. And first, Couch Potato with 6168.
With how many?
6168.
Couch flipping potato.
It's over 400 points ahead.
Wow!
Racing away with the lead. Similar to Button, you might say.
That is Button-esque.
It is Button-esque. I'm 82nd in the league, which means I went up from last time. Woohoo!
Wow, you've actually stopped your downward spiral, which has continued since about race three.
From the very beginning, I think. And you are 325th, which means you went down. Boo.
That was all to do with Fisichella. All of that points dockage, that was pretty much down to one driver who managed five laps, the useless.
Yes, we'll get onto that in a minute. We are still topping the private leagues. We've got 5727.4 to Autosport's 5469.4. Again, probably all to do with Cathy.
Wow, I don't think we pulled out that much of a lead at all in the whole of last year.
No, I can't remember who it was that said it, but someone pointed out that their forum post about their league hasn't been touched for about a month, so I think they know that we are unbeatable.
Oh dear. It's already ended that competition. Just putting into it. So do you know where anyone else is up against us in that league? Was that pretty much it? It was just one and two. No one else matters, really.
The other thing of note about fantasy races this week is that Gavin has a new blog and he posted a great entry with lots of graphs and pictures.
I'm loving the graphs and pictures.
His new blog is called Making Up the Numbers and you can find it at f1numbers.wordpress.com, and we'll put a link in the show notes, of course. And the graphs and charts, they kind of made your weekend, didn't they?
I have to say that suddenly it's a bit of a light bulb moment for me, and I don't want you to think less of me as a result of this, and I don't want you to think that I've not really been concentrating on fantasy races for the past 18 months. However, when I saw Gavin's charts, it suddenly clicked. Finally, fantasy races actually made sense in my head.
Well, otherwise it's a whole load of numbers, but this way you get to see visually what's going on.
I could see why I had such a poor scoring round, because I could see from the bar chart and much, I mean, so much more than numbers. I can see that Fisichella had a tiny little number of laps and everyone else had lots and lots of laps. Now, technically, obviously, that's 58 to 5, and that was the difference. However, when you see on screen exactly where he went wrong and how I lost my points, it all made so much more sense.
Well, yeah, it shows how bad it is for you if a driver doesn't complete a race like Fisichella. And then if you compare that to Button, who was leaps and bounds above everyone else because he completed the race, he won the race, and he had the fastest lap. So he had bucket loads of points.
That's true. And also, I think Gavin point out that Vettel was, although he finished behind Webber, he got more points because of his pole position. On Saturday.
Yes.
So it's so much better. Gavin's reignited my feelings and thoughts on fantasy races, which I had kind of sort of gone a bit cold on recently.
Overall, the average points per race, the worst driver to have is Heikki Kovalainen. Sorry, Amy. It's not
that should be, by the way, that's got to be in brackets, I think, from now on. You know, like a Meatloaf song title?
Yeah.
I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that. It's like Heikki Kovalainen is rubbish in brackets. Sorry, Amy.
Just Heikki Kovalainen, sorry, Amy, would do.
That should be his name.
Yeah.
Just like one long thing.
Let's trademark that. It's not entirely fair because Hamilton's podium position is counted from Australia, which obviously was taken away.
Ah, okay. Why was that taken away? I can't remember that. That seems a long time
ago. It was a long time ago.
Just in the comments, H said he's 328th and he's catching me up. But I'm re-inspired. So, you know, that's not going to happen, H. And Stephen Roy said Pit Lane Fanatic are fourth in the league. They do matter.
Excellent. I'm in that league, so that's good.
That's wonderful. What they need is Kathy in their league. Kathy, you should join too and then push them up.
Gavin said he's going to try and post the fantasy races stuff ASAP after every race.
Okay, so we can do brilliant. Every single post-race debrief.
Feedback. Talking of new blogs, I just had an email this week about a new F1 blog, and I just wanted to give it a quick plug. It's from Martin. He says, "Hey, Christine, just started a new F1 blog, and we'd be greatly appreciated if you let me know what you think. flyf1.blogspot.com. Like I said, it is new, but the blogs up so far are things I feel very strongly about in F1 right now."
Nice one.
The last one, I think, was at the end of May, so it's been a couple of weeks now, but it was about Ferrari and, you know, how they are big in the sport.
Good stuff. I've heard of this one, so Martin, I do apologize. I haven't looked at your blog, but I will do that. Also, I did want to give a quick shout out to The Backpacker, and we're going to put the link in the show notes. We've talked about her before on the podcast, and
the girl who is traveling the whole season,
yes,
visiting every Grand Prix.
She's following F1 with just a backpack, and she's updated a blog. It went quiet for a little while and we were slightly concerned. However, she's come back and the latest couple of posts have been really good, been really funny. So we'll put a link to that and to Martin's new blog, which I will check out at the end of the show. We'll put them in the show notes.
Another email I had this week was from Masaid from Q8. He said, "First of all, you guys are amazing. Keep doing what you're doing." Very kind. "Small question. Can you please send me your enhanced feed link? All I have is the basic MP3 feed. Thanks again."
Ah.
Yeah, we might not have explained this.
Did we talk about the feeds last show?
Yeah, we did.
I forget the whole
We had a question about the feeds because someone was only getting the podcast feed and not the blog stuff.
Right. Didn't mention the enhanced feed. Because I'd forgotten about it, because we don't do an enhanced podcast at the moment. We started off for the first 2 years or so podcast. Every show was duplicated with an MP3 show and an enhanced iPod show, which, for anyone who doesn't know, basically audio podcasts contain pictures, images, links,
chapters, which
is
really
all cool. Sorts of Apple goodness. It only works on an iPod or iTunes or an Apple TV. Basically anything in the Apple ecosystem doesn't work on any of the Windows systems. We stopped doing it at the moment because we have an issue with our hosting company. We want to move away from them because they're not very good. And anybody else other than this hosting company charges a lot of money for data. And duplicating content means we needed twice as much disk space as we would do if we only did an MP3 show. So we've stopped doing enhanced podcasts, and the enhanced feed will only give you MP3 feeds for the time being. And at some point in the future, we may bring them back and we may see if we can afford to do them again.
Well, good. I think that clears it up. If anyone else wants to email me, the address is christine@sidepodcast.com, and I love getting the emails, so please keep them coming. You can ask questions or share your opinions or anything you like.
I learned an interesting fact this week. We promoted live commenting on the podcast in the last show, and unbelievably, I think two or three people turned up in the live comments saying, I heard you promote this on the show, and so now I'm coming to check it out. So a quick hi to, I think it might have been Snuff and a few other people who listened to the podcast, heard all about live commenting and responded. So now that they've heard about your email address, which is
christine@sidepodcast.com,
hopefully we'll get some more emails this week. Promotion works. Who knew?
Who knew? The other way to get in touch is via voicemail. The number is 012128TRACK. That's 012128872255. And we have had a couple of voicemails this week. The first one is from Scott in Italy.
Hi, everyone. This is Scott in Italy with a very rare public appearance on Voice. I want to bring up this discussion on team orders today. Some days I'm in favour of it, other days I'm not. Vettel was faster than Webber in the last few laps, and I'm pretty sure would have caught him and probably got past. On races like this, I keep thinking that we should just legalise team orders, if only for the reason that it will make it transparent. F1 is in theory about two championships, one for the drivers, but also one for the Constructors' Championship. So why can't they decide which teams play with which cars and decide the order? Since team orders have been officially banned, we've seen a few strange things where team cars have changed positions over the last few laps due to something that they put down to a mechanical problem with very few details. But before team orders, I personally used to hate seeing people like Rubens having to give away a hard-fought lead. But, you know, I'm not sure whether it's the same as listening to messages like today, which I'm pretty sure were blatantly wrong. So that's my topic for, frankly, what was a otherwise interesting, not interesting race. So I'm just trying to spice it up with a bit of controversy. Bye.
It is a good point. And I thought it was weird what happened with Vettel, because he was told not to try and overtake Webber. And you'd think they would have wanted him to, because he is the one ahead in the championship.
I think they may have been concerned that the guys could have taken each other out, I suppose. There was another weird instance, actually, talking about that. Glock and Trulli had a little moment of passing, tactical passing, and we're not entirely sure why that happened. So I'm with Scott in the whole, we're being lied to, and we shouldn't need to be lied to. However, as ever, I blame Michael Schumacher. We appreciate voicemail, Scott, just as much as we appreciate emails.
Which is good, because I have another voicemail, and this time it's from Lukey.
Hi, guys. It's Lukey here again. I've just been thinking that we seem to get a lot of people say that we could make Formula One more exciting. Every year there seems to be new regulations and rules, and I've got my own idea to make Formula One more exciting, and it's the best idea you'll hear until Bernie decides that whoever drinks the most cups of tea before the race deserves pole. I don't know, you know what it's like, it could be anything. My idea is simple. Let's change the name of Formula One. I bet you're thinking, why change the name of Formula One? Change it to Formula 11. Why Formula 11? Because it goes up to 11. That's why it would be more awesome. It would be 11 times more awesome than Formula One. And even better, when if your friends or family say, why would you watch Formula 1? Why would you watch Formula 11? What's the difference? Well, you could sit there and say to them, well, it goes up to 11, to quote Nigel Tufnell, of course. Yeah, I think that would increase everything by 11. It would make the cars 11 times more awesome. It would make the tracks 11 times more awesome. It wouldn't make Bernie. No, that wouldn't happen. But yeah, seriously, that's my idea, and I think it could work. We don't need new rules. We just need to turn it up to 11. Bye.
It's like one louder.
There you go.
That is brilliant. I've never heard that before.
I hope Bernie is listening.
I love Lukey.
Sounds like a plan. My final voicemail is not actually a voicemail. I don't know what you call it when you get audio by email, but that's perfectly fine too. I encourage that. Christine@sidepodcast.com.
Brilliant.
This is from someone who isn't necessarily a Side Podcast fan, but know someone who is.
Hi, Side Podcast. It's Zoe from Australia here. I'm Jeremy's girlfriend. It's Jeremy's 37th birthday on the 8th of June, so I thought I'd give him a shout out on here so you can all give him some virtual birthday punches. So happy birthday, Jeremy. I hope you have an awesome birthday, eating lots of cake and playing lots of tennis. And also happy 5th anniversary for the 9th. Thanks, guys.
Ah, that's so cute. Birthday punches.
Punches?
I don't know.
Sign of affection?
It must be a sign of affection.
That's really sweet, Zoe. We very rarely see Zoe on the Side Podcast comments. Occasionally, she has commented to tell us that Jeremy is going to be running late.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the only thing we've seen. Never heard Zoe. So that's really lovely. I think.
And happy birthday to Jeremy.
And happy birthday. No, I'm more happy to hear Zoe, actually.
Okay.
I'm really happy with that. That's really sweet. No, of course, happy birthday to Jeremy.
And happy anniversary to the both of them.
Absolutely. And I do have to say that Jeremy was a bit of an inspiration in the comments earlier today, because there was a lot of talk of, this year's championship's over and Formula One is done for the year and Jenson Button's going to win it. And I think Jeremy came along, he said, I don't care. I'm going to watch every single minute of every single race and I'm going to love it because it's Formula One. And for that, I take my hat off to Jeremy.
Housekeeping.
While we're talking of anniversaries, F1 Minute reaches 500 shows old today. How cool is that?
500 minutes of content you have recorded.
Mm-hmm.
That is unbelievable. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I find that incredible. And do you know what? I've listened to 499 of them.
No, you haven't.
No, I haven't really.
I haven't
awful
actually.
A lot of them.
At the time of recording, I haven't actually done today's show, so it's not quite there yet.
500
but
will drop later. Mm. We will have to do some kind of blog post about that, because that's just a staggering number of podcasts and you are unbelievably dedicated. And Formula One and Bernie owes you something for the amount of work you put into there.
So I do need to go and record F1 Minute momentarily. But before that, we just need to say what we're doing next week.
And what are we doing next week? Because I haven't got a blinking clue.
Neither do I, actually. I don't know.
Okay.
Because it's Le Mans. It's the 24-hour racing and Frank is in it and I'm going to watch every minute except for those when I'm asleep, which means that we'll be quite tired probably.
Okay.
And not necessarily in the mood to do a debrief.
Right.
However, the Friday before is the 12th, the big Friday, the big deadline. What if there's stuff to talk about?
Okay, we might have to do some kind of emergency debrief. We haven't done one of those in a very long time, so maybe that might have to happen. You raise a good point. We're going to be in the live comments, sidepodcast.com/live commenting. We're going to be there for 24 hours. It doesn't matter what you're doing next weekend, you have to promise us you'll come along and you'll join us at some point. From Saturday lunchtime to Sunday lunchtime, you must be around at some point to come along and say hi.
You only have to come along and say hi and say, come on, Frank, even if you don't mean it.
Think of it as some kind of telethon when you just come along and just saying hi is enough to give us inspiration to keep going. We are going to try and last the whole 24 hours and we will be there. And with any luck, the server will hang in for all 24 hours and we will enjoy every single minute of racing action. And then on Sunday evening, we will be dead.
Yes. If we're not doing a debrief, you may find that we are testing things out during the weekend.
We have new stuff to come.
Because we've got lots of things to play with, lots of new technology. So if you are around sidepodcast.com at some point during the weekend, you may find something to listen to, you may not. We don't really know what our plans are.
No, okay, well, fair enough. That's why I don't know what our plans are.
No.
I read there was a mini-series coming. Is there no mini-series coming?
I took that off because it's not coming now.
Okay, we're just a bit too busy to do a mini-series. So are you rescheduling that? Is that going to happen in a couple of weeks' time when there's another break in the calendar?
Possibly.
Good stuff. You're going to tell us what it's going to be yet?
No, of course not.
Okay.
It's always a surprise.
Grand job.
The big surprise is that it's not happening.
Right. And then we are following that. We're going to Silverstone. Well, we're not going to Silverstone.
We're not going to Silverstone.
Unfortunately, but Formula One is.
It is happening.
And
Silverstone's last hurrah.
Maybe. Or maybe not. We just don't know. Will Jenson Button win it?
Yes.
Good. That's good. Something for the British fans to cheer on. And it's a shame that we can't be there. It's a shame that... well, actually, it's not that much of a shame because we get to do a parade lap, which I'm really enjoying.
We might have to do a special one.
That might make up for not being there.
Yeah.
Actually, in some ways, it's quite a good thing that we're not freezing cold and soaking wet on Sunday because we can do a parade lap and they're quite special.
We should note that lots of people in the comments are going. Well, I say lots. Some people are going to Silverstone for the weekend. And if you are, then why not leave us a voicemail from the track?
That would be ace. Or if you've got a camera phone, take us some pictures, upload them to Dropio.
Yep.
That would be
excellent. You can email pictures to Dropio. It is
sidepodcast@dropio. That's sidepodcast@drop.io.
And we will keep our eyes peeled for them. And you can call us on 01212887225. Leave us a voicemail from the track and make us jealous.
We would really appreciate that. It wouldn't make us jealous. It would make us very happy. I think Toastboy said he's going to be there for an extended period. He's going camping and he might even be leaving pretty soon. So we know he's there for the long haul. If you're around, tell us where you are. Tell us where you're sitting. Try and leave us some comments and enjoy the race.